Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised.
10-1-1, advisory for
Welcome to another episode of War Stories. I'm Tom.
And I'm Chuck.
And we are back. And hopefully, as of you guys listening to this, we have released Locker Room as well, because we missed it 1 week. But it's tonight. We're recording this right before Locker Room. So hopefully they're all present and accounted for Locker Room Live tonight.
We shall see.
4 days ago. Wait, if you're listening to this when it comes out. It's hard to keep track. Dude, I got to tell you something, Chuck. I had a very weird moment, right? So I had to go to training 2 days, right? In service. It wasn't even in service training. It was advanced training. And I will not bore you with the details of the training, but I was at an advanced emergency management course. Like, I was learning Hurricane Katrina.
Like ICS. Level.
Yeah. It was ICS 400. So now I'm learning. 400? Hurricane Katrina level management tactics, right? Yeah.
Did they go over how fucked up?
It was better than 300, because 300 was all paperwork. They didn't. They're like, you guys all know how fucked up it was. They actually said it could have been worse. They actually did a decent job, but it was just an unmanageable incident kind of thing.
I mean, we could talk at lengths about
that. Yeah, we could talk ad nauseum about that, but we won't bore them. ICS 300 was all paperwork. It sucked, right?
Yeah.
And it was 3 days of paperwork. So I was like, ICS 400 is going to be even worse, right? But it wasn't. It was 2 days of scenarios and exercises.
Oh, that's even better.
Which was way better. So I get assigned to a table, right? I get assigned to this table. And there's this dude sitting next to me. He's got his jacket on with his guard, you know, emblem on it, and you know, he's got a high and tight and his Oakley boots on. Cool dude.
Was he active?
Well, so here's the thing. So
he reservist still?
We have everybody from like the local fire department, county fire, Department of Lands, emergency management. There's me.
Yeah.
There's lots of people that are going to have to respond and deal with emergency management in this class. This guy's sitting next to me. I get put at the table with him. I could tell he's guard, he's army of some kind, whatever. Joking around, our table becomes a little bit of the class clowns, because anytime a table I'm at kind of gravitates that direction anyway. But he was also that way. I mean, we were just laughing and joking and, you know, punching each other in the elbows and stuff. Day one. Day two, they asked me, hey, we're from, you know, South Idaho, Southern Idaho. We're not from North Idaho, blah, 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 blah. So I gave him some places to eat.
Southerners.
Yeah. So day two, we do this exercise, and he gets picked as the group spokesman to do the briefing.
Right.
And he's like, all right. So he stands up for the group in front of the whole class, and his demeanor instantly changes. And he looks at the instructors with knife hand, and he goes, do you need to know blah, 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 blah? And they're like, no, he's all good, because I'm just going to tell you what we're going to do. All right, everybody shut up. I'm Lieutenant Colonel McDaniels from the 101st WMD. And I'm like, holy shit. I had no idea who this guy was.
So he's a lieutenant colonel from Weapons of Mass Destruction.
I've been dicking around with him playing class clown for a day and a half. And when he gets up to brief, he's a fucking light colonel with the WMD unit.
What the fuck? Like, bro, you know you're like in the wrong. I think you're in the wrong class. You should be teaching this shit. You shouldn't be here. What are you doing?
Dude, it was the most surreal moment of, like, when he sat down, I'm like, you know, he's in the army. He could be fucking with everybody. And he's like straight up like E6 or something. And he was just imitating. No. So I looked him up. He's a no shit light colonel for the 101st WMD. And I was sitting next to him bullshitting. That's cool, so me being me,
come on the show.
I sent you his email. We'll see.
Oh, I dude, I will chat him up. You know who else we're gonna get ready to come on the show?
Who?
The chief that wears shorts.
Oh shit! Really?
Yeah, I'm in contact with him. Yeah.
Nice. Well, yeah. This is the funny.
Maybe in a month. Maybe about a month.
That's the thing about this show is if we get him on, I think for military, light colonel will be the highest rank we've had.
Yeah, I don't think because we had major pat.
Is that major? We've had captain. Yeah, yeah.
Major, I think, was the highest we went after.
Yeah, we'd had a captain.
Highest now.
And then we moved to major. And now if we have a light colonel, we just need a full bird or, you know, somebody with stars.
Anybody have the number for General Mad Dog Mattis? Because we would love
to. Yeah, we could just have him. He'd be fine.
We would just have it. That's it. We're done.
Yeah, I hear he's not doing anything right now.
Yeah, I mean, he told Trump to go fuck yourself. Like, I'm not doing this. I don't think that's what happened. I think he was like, I'm getting too old for this shit. I'm fucking done with yahoos.
So anyway, that was pretty awesome. And then the instructor, I talked to the instructor of the course, and he worked the San Francisco earthquake where the bridge pancaked itself. Damn. That was one of his first emergency management incidents. And so, and he's been then doing it for, you know, 40 years after that. So maybe we'll get him on too. That'd be dope.
Yeah.
But
you know what's weird?
What?
What's weird? ICS 600.
Yeah. Yeah. But they don't go in sequence. 600 is like an offshoot, right? Like you can do 7 and 8, and 7 and 8 aren't. It's weird how they number them. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's boring. Nobody cares.
I was just curious. I'm like, because I know 4, 5, and 4. You know,
four is complex incident management. Like it's super like we were learning about like if your whole state floods, you know, kind of a thing. Right.
No, I'm
for it. But that's not what we're here for.
No,
we have a guest. And so, Chuck, tell us about our guest who has been sitting here quietly, patiently laughing as I describe sitting next to a light colonel. Before you introduce him, Julian, how would you react if you're sitting here, you know, knocking elbows, being a class clown with a dude, and then he stands up halfway through day two of training and tells the whole class he's a light colonel?
Honestly, I don't know. I mean, my very first day in the real army, I cut a cake with a first sergeant. So I really don't know how I'd react, but that's pretty
impressive. You come in on a fucking birthday where they bring the newest army dude and the oldest army guy that's currently there, and they cut the cake together?
No, so I honestly have no idea what it was. I think it was just a troop ball, and they were like, who's the youngest guy? And everybody looked at me.
Youngest and oldest.
That's me. Know, and the first sergeant, you know, we had the saber because we're Cav, and we grabbed the saber, and he held my hand, which was very awkward and intimidating. And we cut the cake, you know, and I was like, all
did
right.
Did he lean over and go, don't fuck this up, kid?
Honestly, yeah. He goes, he's like, just let me hold your hand and we'll do this. All right, man. He was some Georgian. Ooh,
that sounds sexual. Just let me hold you.
It was very intimate, you know, and I enjoyed it.
Just grip
you guys forever bonded. Well, Chuck, tell us about Julian's email.
Okay, we'll do. Real quick, you said you're Cav.
The
only Cav guy I've ever fucking worked with was a fucking G, and he was the hardest, meanest fucking FTO out there. Coolest shit when you weren't a boot. And that dude is a badass. Shout out to fucking Rodriguez because you're a stud. Anyways,
also, we had an AirCav guy on this show who was Vietnam AirCav, if you remember that episode. And holy shit, that guy was a G too. So maybe it's just an AirCav thing. I don't know. We'll find out after we talk to Julian.
From the fucking horse shit.
Yeah, we're riding horses with yellow bandanas and shit.
You're right.
The fucking little cute little cowboy hat. Anyways, so Julian Hamill wrote in and wanted to be a guest on our show. Took some finagling, but we got him on. He was a specialist in the United States Army. He did 3 years and was part of the first conventional forces west of the Euphrates in Syria in early.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wait a minute. See, here's the thing. Chuck schedules this stuff, and I don't read the emails because it's not my job. So when I said Air Cav, you mean Cav.
I was Cav. Yep.
Like clippity cloppity. Get the okay. Now I'm even more excited right now. I'm not gonna lie.
Awesome.
Old school horse shit, cowboy shit. That fucking there is a school There is a school in a state near me where you can go and spend a week in 1870, 1860 style U.S. cavalry school with horses and sabers and black powder and all that shit. And you spend a week as if you were in boot camp for the U.S. cavalry, learning how to fight from horseback and load fucking Spencer rifles. And oh, I would literally be in. I get it that it's like adult role playing to a certain extent.
But I'm no kink shaming, right?
Yeah, right. I'm in. Like, I still would do the City Slickers cattle drive if that's all I could get. But right. if you gave me my choice between a City Slickers like cattle drive and like cavalry school, boy, we're going to cavalry school.
Yeah, in Fort Hood, when it was Fort Hood, we had our own horse detachment, and they were literally cav unit. Yeah. They were a couple of cav guys that literally only trained with the horses, and you know, for ceremonies and stuff like that, they would ride in on the horses with the sabers out and everything, you know, Ohua and shit like that. But
please tell me you sent Chuck a picture of you on mounted with all your shit on.
Oh, no, send it right now. I'm gonna fucking post it.
Get on it, boys.
You know, if you want to see a picture of me like when I was like 8 or 10 on a horse, that if that'll work. But
no, I want to see some army shit
together.
Yeah,
army shit.
Give me your
kid on as a horse child. In the army, but
you all have, right. Hold on. Do you have a fucking cavalry cowboy Stetson? Hat?
I do not have a Stetson. I gave it when I was getting out. I gave it to a young private.
You're gonna regret that.
Good. I mean, yeah,
I'm gonna, yeah, I regret it every day. It's okay.
Do you have your saber?
No, we didn't get sabers. No, I think you only mine. Get sabers when you retire from the unit. I don't know. I didn't have a great.
Oh, so as like an NCO, you don't get one?
No, probably if you like. Stay in long enough to retire out of the unit, they'll probably give you one.
I think otherwise, like a sergeant major or something like that, you probably get a saber.
You know? Well, so now you've got my attention. How in the hell do you tell us how you got into the cavalry, the clippity cloppity hippity hoppity fucking cavalry, not the wop 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 cavalry.
Honestly, it's a shit show. You know, awesome. I
even better makes
you know good like podcast. You know every kid. Growing up, they want to have sports, you know, carry them into life, carry them into the future and everything like that. You know, growing up in a corn town, Illinois, that's really all I had. And, you know, I did sports all my life. I was one of the faster kids and one of the stronger kids. And, you know, I was like, all right, if I keep pushing, I keep trying. I'll have a college, you know, get me in and, you know, we'll do what we need to do with that. That'll be my future. And, you know, like in my family, I had some people in the military and, you know, my grandmother being my grandmother, she's doing ancestry.com and she's finding out stuff about the Civil War. I didn't know about that until, you know, a couple months ago, but, you know, I went through high school. I hurt myself a couple times and it started to seem far-fetched that I was going to go to college due to sports and, you know,
baseball,
I was football and track.
Nice. Oh, shit.
Corner.
Yeah. I was a corner and a running back. Yeah.
I was guessing by your body, your frame.
Yeah. Yeah. I was a corner running back, you know, and, in track, I was 4x1, 4x2, 4x4. In freshman year, I was on varsity, you know, until I hurt myself and didn't let it heal, you know, and that's one of my biggest mistakes. But, you know, to backtrack a little bit, believe it or not, when 9/11 happened, I was in the transition into kindergarten from preschool. And, you know, my dad had said something about, my dad had said something that there was something important on the TV and my mom and I came downstairs. And, you know, believe it or not, I visually remember watching the second plane hit. And even as a young kid, you know, that really set the tone, that really pissed me off. And that was really always in the back of my mind, how bullshit that was, you know, that we can let somebody come on our own turf. So I was always sitting, And then when it started to get into reality where I wasn't going to be getting into college because of sports, and you know what I wanted to do was physical therapy, and that was a ton of money that, you know, my family and I didn't have. You know, I didn't have any college or anything, and I was like, you know what, you know, I've been playing, you know, like everybody nowadays, I've been playing all the Call of Duty games. I can go into the army, you know, go into this military service. And so I looked into the Air Force. I was like, I want to be, you know, like I want to be AC-130 or something like that.
A-10. And, A-10.
Yeah, right. You want to be an A-10. Absolutely. But they were like, yeah, you don't really get to pick your job. I was like, oh, no, fuck that. You know, I want to.
Oh, your recruiter was truthful.
Yeah. Surprisingly enough, right?
Right.
He's like, you're going to get fucked.
Like, yeah. I was like, oh, no, fuck that. Like, I want to pick my job. And so right. I started doing some research, you know, not letting my parents know I'm doing research. And I saw that the Army, you know, if you do a certain score on the ASVAB, you know, you get a list of jobs and you get to pick. And so I secretly went to take the ASVAB, and, you know, I got a bunch of, yeah, secretly, absolutely. And, you know, I took the test. I did the pre-test that they do in the recruiting office, and I qualified for a couple of things. I was like, all right, listen, what's the one that leaves the soonest? and the funny part about it is that I had already, like, I was looking up MOSs at that time on Netflix. It was like that show that was like showing you that army show though, showing you like the basic training, the sapper, you know, all that kind of stuff, like showing you the insights of it. I was all kind of hooah, you know, and
right.
And I saw this MOS called Cav Scout, and I was like, you know what? Growing up as a kid, I always wanted to be, you know, like the guy that's sitting back, you know, like watching everybody, you know, like being the guy that like really fucking fucks people's worlds up, you know, like, you know what they're doing. And
like a QRF type of thing?
Kind of, yeah, but more along the lines of being able to like be there without them knowing you're there.
Recon.
Right.
Yeah, recon.
You know, Overwatch squirrel, dude.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I saw Cap Scout come up. And that was one of the things that popped up on my what was available for my ASVAB, and I had already looked at that. And then that was one of the things that was leaving the soonest. And I was like, all right, fine. First of all, that sounds fun as hell to go into. And second of all, that leaves super soon. I'm going.
Right.
And so I signed that contract before I graduated. Yeah. Right. And so I signed that before I even graduated. You know, so I ended up graduating high school in May of 15. And then
when you signed, did your parents know?
Yeah. So it's kind of hard to remember, but I definitely remember the first sergeant of that recruiting office saying that my mom had to come in with me. So I think I might have needed her approval, but she was at the point of, you know, I can't change your mind at this point. You know, I'm going to give you my opinion.
She accepted her fate.
Yeah, she accepted it.
Were you 17 at this time?
I think I was close.
If you hadn't graduated high school, I would be willing to bet it was your age.
Yeah, because I turned 19 in basic. So I think I was at least 17 by the time I signed, because I think I turned 18 after I signed.
Okay, yeah, you need your mom, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and you know, she's like, I'm gonna voice. Yeah, well, my biological dad was just gone. So, you know, like my stepfather was my dad. He is still my dad, you know.
Nice.
But you know, the first sergeant and I met with my mother, and I signed and graduated May of 15, and then by September of 15, I was in Fort Benning, you know, going through basic and AIT and everything.
Was there ever a moment where like, oh shit, what'd I do?
Oh, absolutely.
The moment you got to Fort Benning, he's like,
yeah. So my recruiter didn't tell me dog shit. He didn't tell me fucking anything, right? So
should have gone to Jackson, dude.
Hold on, let me dust off my surprised face.
Yeah, so my recruiter was like, he was one of the 13 series. So he was, he was like one of those rocket launchers from the trucks. I forgot what series that is. But he was like, yeah, dude, Cav Scout's super cool. You know, like you go to basic, you learn the cool guy shit. And then, and what he sold me on was like, you can go to airborne, you can go to sniper, you can go to ranger, you know, you can go to all these schools all you want. Yeah, my dick in the dirt. Sure. No, you cannot.
Sure, bro. I mean, you can.
Yeah, being naive. Doesn't mean
you will.
Yeah.
When you re-enlist.
Yeah, right. Sure. When you re-enlist, yeah. And when your unit is allotted it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So, anyways, I get to basic, and I'm in the receiving portion of it, and you know that's Fort Benning, but it's like on the side of Fort Benning. Okay. And you're there for like 2 weeks. I was sitting there for 2 weeks, standing in a hallway with a shaved ass head. You know, my knees started to hurt and everything like that, being scared because there's people walking around, you know, looking at you. I was like, man, fuck this. You know, like, this isn't what I wanted to do. I wanted to do the cool guy shit, you know, this, that, and the other.
Whoa, you're fucking about to.
Yeah, right. And, everybody was like, just get through this. You go do like basic, you do the fun guy stuff. So we did like 2.5 weeks of receiving. And I don't know if they still do it today. I have one of the guys that I trained is now a drill sergeant. I don't know if they still do it today. I got to ask him. But we had the shark attack. And so we had the shark attack. And like right when we got to our unit, we had to hold, you know, the green duffel bags over our heads. And the funniest part about the shark attack was one of the guys right next to me, you know, he locked his knees and he was holding the bag up and he had to have locked his knees. And I remember standing there and our senior drill sergeant, like bad motherfucker. He was like scary to even look at. Right. He was above us in the balcony, you know, looking down on us, yelling, no microphone, nothing, just yelling at us.
Right.
And, This dude next to me, I mean, like 2 feet away from me, just falls out, face plants on the cement. I'm like, oh shit! All right, you know that's what we're doing here. Okay.
Pro tip, boys and girls, don't lock your knees.
You know,
or do, because it's funny to watch.
I mean, there's
my god, it was hilarious, right? Because the bag went into the other line of troops, right? And so it tripped the guy that he was behind. And so that guy fell. This guy is asleep next to me. And I'm just holding up my bag, watching all this unfold. You know, it was chaos, but I loved every second of it. I was like, this is what I came in for. Right.
Did you used to love when your fucking DIs? So we had drill instructors, not drill sergeants, but we had DIs in the Marine Corps. And when they were you know, they see something funny, like a fucking dipshit eat, like lock his legs, his knees out, and then fucking collapse on his face. They would have the best bearing in the fucking world for dumb shit. But when stuff was actually funny to them and they see someone get hurt, it was the funniest thing watching them hold their composure and try not to laugh, but still yell at you for fucking eating shit and falling.
My favorite part about this story so far is that we just made a clear distinction about things that Marines care about that other people don't care about, is that Chuck had to tell you we didn't have drill sergeants. We had drill instructors.
I don't care about that.
He had to get that one leg up, right?
He had to get that one lick in there. He's like, we didn't have Marines that. But I digress.
Goddamn right, it's fucking DI, motherfucker. It's drill instructor, not fucking drill sarge.
It's so funny. Like, how so you funny said because that like is such that is, yeah. That is that's anyway. Like, I just had to point that out because it's always been one of those things that has cracked me up. Is this shit that matters? And it does. Like, I can tell you what people are like. Oh, were you a deputy sheriff? I'm like, fuck no, dude. No,
dick.
No, I wore blue. I didn't wear tan and green. I know how to properly piss without getting it all over myself. I'm good.
Right. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Anyway, well, that's funny because two of the drill sergeants, they didn't care because they saw me look over at homeboy that was asleep and they got in my face because I was breaking, you know, I was breaking the position. And so they got in my face, and as the other two rolled over the dude that was snoring, you know, it was hilarious. And the best part about it is when they rolled him over, they took his PC off. And I mean, this dude frisbeed this thing like I've never seen before, and it got up into the rafters of your patrol cover, you know, your hat that you wear that you have to put on if you go outside, you know.
So you're covered.
Yeah, your cover. And they took that cover off of him, and this man frisbeed it, didn't even look. He just frisbeed it. And that thing went into the rafters of the overhang and stayed there until we graduated. I'm pretty sure it's still there. Yeah, it stayed there. So, like, you know, you get issued two PCs when you go through receiving and everything. That man only had one because the other one was sitting in the rafters. We always bully them about it.
I'm going to tell you what. This is why they issue you two PCs now, is because they got tired of all these dumb fucks coming back and asking for a second one because the DI had thrown it up on top, or the drill sergeant, had thrown it up on top. It happened, and they were like, let's just fucking give him two. One's disposable. You know he's going to get it thrown somewhere.
Yeah, it's less amount that we have to fuck them up for not having
right.
And we only had one. We only had one.
That was probably a fucking instructor that came forward and was like, hey, can we just issue them two? I can throw at least one.
Right.
They would make us pay for it out of our own fucking check. If we lost a piece of gear or fucking it became unserviceable, we'd be like, okay, you're going to the fucking PX and I'm going to fucking run your ass there and you're going to go fucking buy it.
Yeah, you got to buy it. Yeah.
But sir, you threw it up on the roof because you were stupid.
Yeah, because you fell out.
Your fault.
That's why it's on the roof right now.
Whose fault is that?
Yeah. Oh, man. But that was my introduction into the Army. And in my head, I'm like, this is what I fucking want. This is what I signed up for, you know? You know, I wanted...
Okay, what was your favorite Army movie, or what was your impression? Like, if you point to a movie and go, that's the fucking... Army growing up, where did you get your impressions from so that when you got there you were like, yeah, okay, it's finally happening, they're treating me like shit, we're getting fucking yelled at? Like,
to be completely honest, and it's really funny, I was just watching it today, it was Band of Brothers. I grew up watching Band of Brothers, and you know, like with Kurahi and stuff like that.
Don't even talk about it.
You know, I saw that and I was like, fuck yeah, you know, like I want to be pushed to my absolute limit and like go over everybody else. I was like, fuck yeah, I want that. And then when it got to that point, really, like when you go through basic, it's not like you for yourself, you got to do it as a team. But it was really just everybody out for themselves. And I was like, I'm going to be better than every single motherfucker in here. you know, and I loved it. I loved it. It wasn't rewarded trying to be better than everybody, that's what I wanted. I wanted the drive. I wanted the kick in the ass, you know, because I was an only child. I didn't really get a kick in the ass. But you know, like that's what I needed, you know.
If you go to basic expecting recognition, you done fucked up. And I'm going to tell you right now, whether it's the police academy or basic training or the fire academy, the last thing you want is to fucking stand out and be recognized.
You don't want to be seen out of sight, out of mind, right? You don't want to be known.
My dad told me, be outstanding, but don't stand out.
Yeah.
best advice you could give someone. Best
advice. Be outstanding. Don't stand out.
and see, I didn't really have that. Because my great grandfather was in the Philippines during World War II.
Shit, nice.
Yeah, and so my he almost lost, I think it was a leg or an arm. Oh no, he was in a plane crash. He almost lost a leg or an arm. It was the only thing I know. He died when I was pretty young, so I never got to talk to him about it. But all I know is the limb was hanging on by a flab of skin, and he ended up saving it and being able to use it.
Oh, holy fuck, really?
Yeah, in the Philippines. It was a really cool story that I got to hear a couple of times, different versions of, but never from him because he didn't want to talk about it.
Well, they're all nurses over there.
What's up?
They're like all nurses over there.
Yeah. And then my grandfather was in the National Guard during Vietnam.
Oh, wow.
And so, like, I did, and nobody else, you know, like, that I knew of was in the military. So I had no warning. I had no nothing that, like, what I was to expect, you know, once into this military training, other than the videos, you know, all this propaganda, you know, like,
be like, oh, this all is what your MOS you can does. Be.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So I wasn't really prepared, but once I got like blindsided by it, smacked in the face with it, I was like, oh my God. I was like, this is amazing. You know, this is the army that like you see in the movies type of thing.
But you never had brothers, so that makes sense.
No.
Because you're finally, like, they're having brothers foisted upon you, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like, to this day, I went through basic with somebody. He was two numbers away from me. You know, like, you all get, like, numbers and everything like that.
Sure.
He was two numbers away from me. He is still my brother. I was a part of his wedding. You know, we went to the same unit, the same platoon, the same everything. And I mean, that the Army gave me a family I never had. And I am forever grateful for that. You know, I can never give that up.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
So, so now we know how you got in.
Yeah.
So how do you end up in the cavalry?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so what happens from there? Tell it. The floor is yours. You can tell us whatever you want. What is your story?
It really, like I said, it's a shit show. So, you know, I get to Fort Hood, Texas in 2016, you know, January of 16. And
nothing goes on at Fort Hood, right?
Yeah, nothing goes on there, right?
Nothing goes on.
So the unit I got dropped into was 6-9 Cav, 1st Cavalry Division, Apache, you know, and, you know, we got dropped there, and they had apparently just gotten back from Korea. And, you know, like, you know, I'm not sure how it works with the Marines or anything that like that, but we do cycles with deployment, and it's like
we do as well.
Okay, cool. Awesome.
Yeah.
So like you do a 9-month deployment, you come back, do 6 months of training, and then you like get ready for the next, you know, rotation. They had just gotten, okay, cool. They had just gotten back from a Korea, you know, like that doesn't really count. But they had, just gotten back from Korea. Unfortunately, I got put into a heavy unit, which was the Bradleys. I fucking love those things as much as they're pieces of shit. I love them.
Fuck yeah. We have their suspension on our vehicles.
Oh my God. They're awful. The suspension
is fucking great, but our vehicles sucked. And
yeah.
The Bradleys are similar.
The weapon system, like I would marry the weapon system if I could. But
what was on the Bradley weapon system?
So we had the 25 Mike. And you know, like everything else, you know, like we had a tow, you had a 25 mic, you had a 240 Charlie for the coax.
You had all of that on a Bradley?
Yeah, so that was considered a recon vehicle. You know, that thing,
no missiles?
That thing, you can hear that thing from fucking 25 miles away, you know.
That was considered
a recon unit because you can attach like LRASs to it or whatever like that.
Right.
God.
We ain't sneaking up on shit.
You ain't sneaking up on nothing. You can turn the engine off and be quiet for a little bit.
Just coast.
Yeah, like if you with my Bradley, if you turn the engine off for too long, you're losing all radio power. You know, so
you can't, that's like, a police car, dude. You can't turn a police car off or you'll come back and it'll be dead.
Yeah, you can't communicate with your unit, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I show up, I was like, awesome. You know, I'm with the heavy guns. You know, I lost all of my hearing trying to shoot them during AIT because I didn't have earbuds. I was like, these things are amazing. So we show up and we got in right into the recycle of all the training. And, you know, being a heavy unit, you have to do gunnery. You have to do the coax movement and stuff like that. So we ended up training a Mississippi National Guard unit. We did about 25,000 fucking gunneries. We did a bunch of field exercises, you know, like, you know, checking all the boxes to like become like deployable. And so we spent the whole year of 2016 doing that. And near the end of 2016, we had pre-deployment leave because we were supposed to deploy in like, I think the whole unit was supposed to go in like March or April of 17. So at that point, we had shot, my track had shot Top Gun. We had worked together from January of 16 to November, December of 16. You know, my TC, my gunner, I was the driver at that point. We had dismounts. We were Top Gun at that point in the unit. It was amazing. And then our TC said, you know what? I'm going airborne. I'll see y'all later. You know, right before we deploy.
And that's your troop commander, right? And the troop commander hatch?
The truck commander, whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
Got it.
We were the three truck, the three track. You know, he said he was going airborne right before we deployed. And we're like, all right, yeah, we'll just go fuck ourselves, you know. Like, we'll
be, right.
We'll be seamless. Yeah.
Let me guess, he was a sergeant?
Yeah, he was an E5 at the time. Once he got to his unit, I think he went to the 10th Mountain. I think he went 10th Mountain?
Yeah, 10th Mountain, dude. That's the guy I was talking about. He's from 10th Mountain.
He went E6 once he got the 10th Mountain. Right. We were kind of TC-less. And then our, you know, you get a lead scout if you're in a scout platoon. Our two-track, the two-track is the lead scout. And the lead scout says, fuck my track. I want the Top Gun. And so we became the two track. We know we went from three track to two track to be the lead scout because we're the Top Gun.
Sure.
And and at that point, I was in the mindset of like, this is really boring. I want to grow my career. I want to do bigger and badder things. I want to be a bad motherfucker. You know, being a heavy unit, you weren't allotted a lot in the unit. So you couldn't go to like SDM, you couldn't go to, you know, airborne, because what does a heavy unit need airborne for, right? And so I found
this cool.
Yeah, right. You're in a vehicle, you don't need to be airborne. And so I found a school that was a small arms master golf, Mike Golf, I'm sorry. And you know, that's anything from a M9 to a Mark 19, you have to learn everything from the sear to the firing pin, everything about these weapon systems, you know? And sure. I learned that. And I mean, that was the best school I've ever gone to. That was so amazing. And that was a couple weeks school. I went to that for a couple of weeks. And then they're like, once I finish that school, my unit goes, hey, you're going to be the first one leaving. You leave in 2 weeks. Get ready, pack up, you're going to Kuwait. And I was like, oh, great. Go to Kuwait for 9 months. Fantastic. Right. You know?
Whoop-de-doo, Basil.
Yeah, right? So we get our pre-deployment leave, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I leave before, I'm like one of the first planes out of Fort Hood to go to Kuwait. Get to Kuwait, I'm supposed
to
learn.
The boarding party.
Huh?
You're the forwarding party to set everything up.
Yeah, so I had to learn all the QRF and the defense systems and everything like that for Buring, so I can teach everybody else that came in behind me. And so I was doing that. I was learning all that. You know, I started learning the routes for QRF, everything like that, all the cool guy stuff, right? I was so disappointed that I was going to be QRF for Camp Buring for 9 months. I was so disappointed. But, you know, like, once my unit got there, my platoon got there, I was like, all right, you know, like, I've been working out for a long time. You know, I just work out, go to QRF. My boys are here now. This will be all right. And then we got told we're going to do a gunnery while we're in Kuwait. And, you know, like, being a heavy unit, all you do is gunneries.
They're great, dude.
And it's very demoralizing, you know, because you're just sitting there soaking up the heat. You know, they sometimes forget about you on the firing range, whatever. you know, and since I had been there for a while, I was told I needed to go. I needed to go sign for a couple of 240 Charlies and Bravos and stuff like that, so we could put on the trucks. You know, QRF was so nonchalant. It was just like I joined the army to do a cool guy, like, you know, be prepared for anything type of shit. And I didn't even have like a TLE or anything like that on my trucks. I just had a 240 on a bipod sitting out of the turret. You know, it was fucked up. I was pissed off. You know, like, I was doing this shit, and I'm like, all right, we're doing the coolest thing you can do on Camp Buring, but, like, what are we doing here, you know, type of thing.
Right.
Like, the coolest thing we did was when we're rolling by, we had found, like, a rack of 40 mic rounds that EOD had to come out and deal with. But we were doing that, and I don't know about y'all, but we had to use this app called Voxer. Which was a
remember Voxer?
Well, yeah, Voxer. It was like a little walkie-talkie on your phone, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know,
I just surprised they had you using it in the military.
Absolutely, you had to download shit.
That's the military.
As soon as you got into Camp Buring.
Like, hey, y'all, motherfuckers need Snapchat.
Yeah,
right. we're gonna send you orders through Snapchat. We use it because when we send you the map, you can look at it and then it disappears. Nobody it's OPSEC.
Nobody
it's
can Snapchat. See it. Right? Yeah, of course.
Dude,
stupid OPSEC. Shit. Yeah. And so my TC at the time, the lead scout, he was the baddest motherfucker I knew at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, he was involved in the Iraqi invasion. You know, he went into that as a PV2 and came out in E5. You know, he was a bad motherfucker. Wow. He was a bad motherfucker, you know, like grew up. He was a white boy that grew up in Compton and shit.
This week, he died in the bull hard.
Yeah, he was the epitome of like army, you know.
Right.
And so he was my
his
new
first
TC.
Word was ugh.
His first word was motherfucker, right? You know, I get a message from him on Voxer. He goes, hey, you know, my gunner.
That still makes me laugh. Sorry.
No, you're fine. I was a driver at the time. Still, I was still a PFC. And my gunner was a specialist. And he goes, hey, where the fuck are you and Wright at? And, like, you didn't want that message from that man, right? And so I was with Wright. You know, we were signing out some 240s for QRF. I looked at Wright. I said, fuck, Hillian, like, Sergeant Hillian fucking wants to know where we're at. and I was like, we're about to be back at the tent. We just signed out a bunch of 240s. He goes, all right, stay where the fuck you're at. I was like, dude, and me and Wright instantly looked at each other. We're like, all right, what did we do? Like, let's backtrack 72 hours. You know, yeah, like, we are what did we do?
Smoked.
Yeah. And we're like, what the hell did we do? And so we're sitting there and we're like, all right, let's go have a cigarette. There was a smoke pit right outside the tent. And so I'm sitting there and like,
You can smoke a cigarette before you get executed, right? That's yeah.
Absolutely, right? You should have the last
stupid
smoke, right?
That you're in the middle of a fucking desert and you have to have a fucking smoke pit.
Yeah, you have to have a smoke pit. I think it was 30 dumb feet away from the tent.
So stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. It was whatever. But I'm sitting there with Wright and we're trying to brainstorm and I look over his shoulder and I have Sergeant Hillian, my brand new platoon sergeant, our platoon sergeant had left us as well. Our LT and then our CO walking towards us. And I looked at Wright, I was like, we're fucked. I don't know what we did, but we're fucked. And you know, they end up walking to us. We put our cigarettes out. We stand at parade rest. And they tell us to relax and sit down. And the LT goes, well, boys, effective as of right now, I was Apache troop. They were like, as effective as of right now, you are a part of Bandit Troop. You are, you were selected by Squadron to go over to be the lead scout for Bandit. You are going to Syria in 2 weeks. Go meet your platoon and then pack up.
And at this point, how fucking stoked are you?
Oh, so honestly, it was a mixed feeling because when I was leaving home for our pre-deployment leave, I had this gut feeling that I wasn't coming home.
And oh, fuck.
I was like, I'm going to be sitting in Kuwait. What the fuck's going to happen? You know, like, I'm fine. And then once that motherfucker told me I was going to Syria, I was like, hold up.
That's all of a sudden your memories of that feeling came back. Sure. Yeah.
Hold up. So, wait a minute.
Yeah, absolutely. I was like, all right, I am absolutely fucking excited to go do this. Like, I want to be a part of it. I get to go do.
But you're nervous at the same time.
But I, like, my stomach dropped and I was like, holy fuck.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, shit just got real.
And yeah, literally. And luckily, I had gone to basic with a couple of guys that were in Bandit, my sister platoon, sister troop, I'm sorry. And so I knew a couple of them, and, you know, we went over, met our new platoon, and found our new truck. We got transferred into a light unit so we can go, because Bradleys are invasion vehicles. So we couldn't take Bradleys into Syria. Oh, we had to take Humvees. Yeah. So we had.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So we had to become a heavy unit from. We had to become a light unit from a heavy.
A light heavy unit.
Yeah. It was. You know, we had to reconstruct everything we had just been trained. Mm. But the hardest part about it, you know, not to sound kind of weak, but, you know, I had spent an entire year training with the boys of First Platoon Apache, you know, and those were my brothers, you know, they're still my brothers today. I talk to them every single day. Like, I love those guys. And, and in a snap of a finger, I was a part of a different troop, a different, not even a different platoon, but a different troop, you know? And, we had 2 weeks to pack our shit and get the fuck ready to go. And
I'm
so,
just going to speak to something real quick. Yeah. That feeling that you got, that gut feeling you got, you're really so excited. You're like, fuck yeah, we get to actually go do something instead of sitting around with our dick in our hands training.
Yeah.
And now we're getting to go to Syria. But then you get that pit in your stomach, that feeling you're like, fuck, I might not make it back. But that overall excitedness is probably the best feeling that you've had.
Oh my God. Yeah.
For forever. Like,
yeah.
So I could speak to that. Like, knowing you're going to be on an interior search with a known suspect armed with a gun, you're like, fuck, I don't want to die, but I want to be that motherfucker that goes in there and get that shit.
I want to be the first motherfucker in there. Right?
Exactly.
Hard.
It's the craziest feeling.
Pumping,
it's,
right?
Isn't it the craziest feeling ever? It's like, you're so excited, but you're
straight up
excited.
It is bizarre because when I would go to, you know, burg alarms, there's a, you know, you go to a burglary call or you go to a prowler call or any kind of in progress and you're like, I hope he's there. I fucking hope he's there. You don't want it. I remember there was a couple in particular when I was young. My favorite, but the best one was we had a woman, she called and she said, I think someone's in my house. And I was like, okay,
get it.
Let's fucking go. And so, you know, we're hauling ass, silent code where you, lights and siren no, or lights, no siren, hauling ass. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. We scoot up. We park, you know, three houses down, kill the lights, kill the cars, whatever. We walk in and we're, you know, approaching. And it's that same feeling of like, I fucking hope this is real. And at the same time, you're like, oh my God, if this is real, the shit is going to, it's going to fucking go down. And when we got to the fucking driveway and we saw flashlights bebopping across the curtains inside the house, we were like, fuck yeah. You know, it's, you can't, I don't think anybody who hasn't got, and I always say anybody that wants to be a cop, anybody that wants to be a in the military, you want to be, you have to have a taste for blood. You have to have that little part in you that wants to get some.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as scary as it is, it's more thrilling than scary.
You have to have that monster inside of you.
Yeah.
It's the best. Yeah. It's the best feeling and the worst feeling mixed together in a swirl of shit.
Right. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, anyway. Absolutely. And like, and being fuck by that time, I was 20 years old at that time. I wanted,
you're a fucking baby.
Yeah. I wanted, not only did I want blood, I wanted fucking blood for everything I've seen ISIS do, but I wanted to go the fuck home. You know, I'm only 20 years old. But I wanted fucking blood. So, you know, that kind of overpowered my fear of not going home. And right. Now I was like, all right, let's fucking do it. Let's learn it. Let's get the fuck going. And so, you know, that was what I deployed in early February of 17. I got told that mid-March of 17. Yeah, really fucking quick. I was there for maybe a month and a half. They're like, guess what? You're leaving. Bye. I was like, absolutely. What? Thank you. Thank you. You know, like I didn't want to sit in Kuwait. Camp Bearing was a fucking, you picked up Fort Hood and you put it in the fucking desert. I didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and so I met, we met our troop, we met our platoon, and it was, God, it was so surreal. It was like, you know, my gunner and I, where we're walking away, going to pack our shit, and we're like, we're finally doing it. We're doing what we've been training for over a year.
You know, yeah, looks like we didn't get dressed up for nothing.
Yeah, let's go. You know, let's go. And, you know, we sat there and then finally we got the okay to get on the plane out of Arif John, you know. And, you know, that took at least 3 days. You know, we had got on the plane. We got halfway there. We're like, yeah, they were like, yeah, we got a bunch of, you know, land to air. We got to turn around. And so we turned around the first night. And we came back, we slept in Camp Bearing again, and then we had to go back and load up on the plane. And then we got, you know, we got sent back over there. You know, each time I fell asleep, I was so tired. I fell asleep, I had a migraine each time, you know, and we, when we finally landed, we landed in KLZ. It was a Kobani landing zone. It was just this dirt fucking trail. It was named after, one of the Kurdish fighters that was a bad motherfucker that we got to meet. It was awesome. But we landed pitch dark. We didn't have any nods or anything at that point. We had to keep them in our rucksacks. So we landed and we're hopping out of the plane, and we had to hold on to each other's fucking backs and get led into our tents or whatever. And we sat there and we're at KLZ. Kobani landing zone. And then we got told that we were going to establish our own FOB on the flot of Syria, Turkey, you know, all that shit show. And yeah, so we got told that we're going to establish our own FOB about 2 hours away from the landing zone and resupply and everything. And we needed to load up. We needed to put our flags on the trucks. Which I still have my flag. I have my flag that flew on the truck the entire time. It's in my safe. We had to do, God, what's the system called that like disrupts IED signals and stuff like that on the Humvees? I forgot what that's called.
Oh God. I don't know.
But we had to like get that all set up, you know, our FBCB2s, all that kind of stuff. We had to get that all that set up, and then we rolled out. And, you know, rolling out was the most surreal fucking tone setting thing I've ever had to do. You know, so we're rolling in, and if you look on the map of Syria, we were in the northern part of Syria, you know, from the border of, Turkey and Syria. And we had to show presence to stop Turkey from coming into Manbij, whatever you want to call it. You know, because we're NATO allies. They're not going to do that when we're there. so-called. And, you know, we had to show presence for Russia, Turkey, the regime, you know, ISIS and all their little subgroups to not do bullshit when we're over there. And so we were working with the Kurdish, you know, the YPG, the YPJ. The YPJ was amazing, you know, being men, you know, going into this desert and you haven't seen a woman in so long. You see YPJ and you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is awesome. YPJ was specifically a woman-based Kurdish fighting group. Mm-hmm. Very cool. They were badasses, you know. But we were with the YPG mostly. We went to this thing called Radio Hill. We were attached to Special Forces 5th Group because they had to go down to... Where did they have to go down? They had to go down to like the last stronghold of ISIS in Syria. So they were like, we need y'all to come in, hold this position so we can go down there. And so, you know, you had the layover, you know, they had to give all the information, show us the flot, you know, the forward line of troops and everything like that. And we had that for about 2 weeks and they were like, all right, you're on your own. See ya. And, and you know, like every single one of my guys in my platoon, we were 20 years and younger. So this was our first, not only for our whole troop, but for the platoon that went out to the FOB that we were supposed to make, with HESCOs and sandbags and everything like that. This was not only our first deployment, but our first combat deployment. And, we got deployed. We got sent there with the headquarters platoon and our first platoon. That was it. So we were pulling guard, going on missions, you know, like there was no sleep. We had no showers, no food other than MREs, no tents, no anything. So we're sleeping on the roof of this old ISIS compound where nooses were still hanging from the radio tower. You know, like like you go to clear the building and there was diapers and there was a room filled with diapers and feces and everything. There was another room, you know, had a bunch of other shit in it. And then there was a radio tower attached to this building. It had nooses hanging from the attachment to the tower in the building, bullet filled, everything like that. And so we show up there. We're like, all right. This is our new home. So we start filling sandbags, start filling HESCOs. It's one platoon. Obviously the headquarters platoon wasn't doing anything. So it was all first platoon, my platoon doing everything, doing the guard, doing the missions, doing every fucking thing, you know? So that was pretty terrible. We did that. And our unit kind of left us out to dry because they were like, all right, you're there. You're with a SF unit, 5th group. You know, like good luck everybody else type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't have a resupply situation. They didn't have anything like that because the KLZ was the KLZ was at least 2 hours away, 2 hour fucking Humvee drive away. And, you know, as we're rolling in, I completely passed this. As we're rolling into this area, there was just countless miles of people leaving with their entire lives stacked onto donkeys, stacked onto tractors, and anything they can stack their life onto, they were heading the opposite way. You know, so we're heading in, driving, and there's just, I mean, a strip of people walking, riding, you know, doing everything they can to get out of the area, and we're heading into that area. And so that was really mood setting. It was very hard to see, you know, as a young PF. Well, I got promoted as a specialist to that point, but it was very hard to see as a specialist to walk into that, you know. But when we got there, the mood was set, and we knew that we had to be presence, like we're very presence operated. And we had to make sure everything was ready for an attack because we were told that there was attack every single day that was going to happen.
So was there?
No, luckily not. So we were on this thing called Radio Hill, and there was a Kurdish compound right next to us, sister to us. And then we had our compound, and we had the Kurdish help us fill the HESCOs and everything like that.
Sure.
There was never an attack on us, but there was consistent attacks around Manbij, you know, all those sister towns, everything like that.
Yeah. So how long were you there for?
We were there from April to, I think it was late August, early September.
Mm-hmm.
Because they wanted us to return for a gunnery in Kuwait.
Oh, wow. No fucking figure, bro.
Yeah, no, right? Of course.
We were here for some fucking training. So yeah. Did shit ever go sideways with you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. So we got really complacent. I'm not going to lie. Our unit got so complacent.
Sounds like it.
So we did a lot, you know, being recon and everything. We did a lot of LRAS, you know, missions. We did a lot of, you know, looking over the, you could literally go to this point. We called it Mud Dog Mountain. That was our platoon name. It was Mud Dogs. You can go to Mud Dog Mountain and you can look over the valley and the sister mountain. You know, you could see Turkey's flags flying. Over that way, you look to your left, you saw Russian flags flying. And then if you looked into the valley itself, you saw ISIS and other little subgroups running around doing whatever the fuck they do, right? And can we pause? I got to go to the bathroom. I'm so sorry.
It's all right. We'll pause right now. Well, it sounds like you've got some pretty interesting shit that goes down when you get complacent, because let's face it, that's when we all get our shit pushed in, is when we get complacent. We've talked about it on this show multiple times. However, you, dear listener, you who are here to hear about the complacency, you will have to tune in next week because we've reached our limit. However, I did talk to Chuck, and Chuck says that you did not have your own dedication, so we are providing one this week. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. Yeah, I luckily got to bring everybody home. So,
if somebody else
can do it, absolutely.
Yeah, that's even better. So, Chuck, who do we have?
Well, first, I want to say, hey, Julian, thank you so much. We can't hear to go and dive into part two and hear about all the stuff that happened while you were in Syria.
Absolutely.
This podcast and this dedication goes out to Jonathan Diller. For those of you guys who don't know Jonathan Diller, he was a New York police officer, or he is a New York police officer who was killed in line of duty. It's made the rounds on social media, and next podcast we're going to have, unfortunately, two others from New York. It's been a bad week. We've lost a lot of cops this week.
Yeah.
Several, a lot. It's been bad. So this goes out to you, brother, Jonathan Diller. Detective First Grade Jonathan Diller was shot and killed during a traffic stop near 1919 Mott Avenue in Far Rockaway area of New York City. At 5:50 p.m., Detective Diller and his partner approached a vehicle that was stopped in front of a bus stop. Despite being asked numerous times to exit the vehicle, the subject refused. He pulled out a gun and shot Detective Diller in the stomach, striking him under his vest. Detective Diller was able to get the gun away from the suspect, and his partner wounded the suspect. Detective Diller was transported to Himika Hospital, where he succumbed to his wounds. The subject, or suspect, fuck him, he's not a subject, he's a suspect. The suspect, who had an extensive criminal record, was taken to Himika Hospital and is in stable condition. Detective Diller has served in the New York City Police Department for 3 years and was assigned to Patrol Bureau Queens South Community Response Team. He is survived by his wife and 1-year-old son. He was posthumously promoted to Detective First Grade and given a new shield number of 1110, which is his son's birthday. He was 31 years old, tour of 3 years. His badge number, 110.
Well, rest easy, brother. We got it from here, and it has been a shitty week for law enforcement. It's been shitty for law enforcement in general. We know that. And there are way too many people that are getting fucking released on bail or released OR and then the next thing you know. Yeah. So
for years, man.
Yeah. So, well, Julian, thank you. And we're looking forward to having you back. And Chuck, do you want to take us out?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you, Jillian, so much for coming on. We can't wait to hear what happens in part two. For everyone listening, we want to say thank you for listening. If you like the podcast and the content we provide, please help us out by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or really whatever podcast platform you listen to us on. We're available on YouTube as well. Our podcast is available on all major podcast streaming platforms as well as on YouTube. Rating and reviewing is how we grow. So please, if you listen to us, rate and review us. And if you want to support us, please go to our Instagram at war_stories_official and our Facebook at War Stories Podcast. You can hit the link in the bio, hit our website, which is www.warstoriesofficial.com. You can grab some gear. It has the rest of the links too for bookings. If you want to be booked on the show, there's the booking link right there, which is booking.warstories@gmail.com. Again, that is booking.warstories@gmail.com. If you just have a question you want answered, you can go to mailbag. The mailbag link in the either Instagram or Facebook. It's in the link in the bio. You can click that, ask all your questions there. And if you want to be featured on the show, again, go to booking.warstories@gmail.com. I can get you booked. We're always looking for veterans, law enforcement, firefighters, medics, but also corrections, dispatchers, and nurses. We thank you for the support. Stay safe.
And until our next episode, come home with your shield or on it.